This is Houston Indie Media on 90.1 KPFT.
The white man can't even go outside and get a disease. We talk about how like white people can't even go outside into the sunlight without contracting a disease, like their skin cancer. They got their SP5 3000s. You can't even go out into the sunlight. What good is that? Well, they stay on their computer shorts. All tan everything. All brown man, sound man. Sit down man. All brown skin. Young melanin. Melly mel melding.
Tonight we're going to go back in time to hear old interviews by the Houston Indie Media Collective. This first clip is from 2003.
Welcome back to Houston Indie Media's radio show. I'm Abby. Two Fridays ago, two constables from Harris County Precinct 1 killed a 52-year-old man by shocking him with a taser. As the Houston Chronicle reported, the constables had been dispatched to serve a mental health commitment warrant on the man. When he resisted, the officers delivered the taser shock several times. The man died later in the nearby hospital. This was the fourth death of an unarmed individual at the hands of local law enforcement officials so far this year. This evening, I spoke with protesters about the taser issue.
Our liberties under attack. What do we do? Public safety under attack. What do we do? Armed civilians under attack. What do we do?
Act up, fight back.
Public safety under attack. What do we do?
Act up, fight back.
Civil liberties under attack. What do we do?
Act up, fight back.
This is Abby with Indie Media, and I'm here at the Harris County Civil Justice System.
Criminal Justice Center.
Center, thank you. And we're at the taser protest. I'm here with
Randall Callanan, president of the Houston chapter of the ACLU.
Why are you here today?
We're here for a number of reasons. One is to protest the recent killing of Mr. Casey, who was just killed by Precinct 1 constables who were serving a mental health warrant. During that mental health warrant service, Mr. Casey was tased several times, and eventually he died. Now, it is not known whether he died from strangulation or from blockage of the airways or from the taser, but the fact is it was excessive force, and studies have just come out recently which have shown that tasers cause heart damage in animals. This is a military study that just came out, and Taser International has not done any studies really themselves except one involving one pig and five dogs. So what's happening now is a mass experiment on the population of the United States on whether tasers are harmful. And we want a moratorium on tasers. Right now there are over 5,000 organizations, law enforcement agencies in the United States which use the taser. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of tasers which are out there tasering people. For instance, the HPD, which got the tasers, a mass amount of tasers in November, since November have tased 140 people. So the question is, first of all, a racial profiling report just came out just on Thursday, last Thursday, which showed that racial profiling in stops is going on. Is there racial profiling going on in who they're tasing? We want to know if there should be more openness in the system so we know who is being tased, under what circumstances they're being tased. And the mayor and the police chief has promised more openness in excessive force, but we have not seen it yet. Now, another problem that we see is that that police chief heard and the mayor said, hey, look at Phoenix. We use tasers over in Phoenix, and now the shootings have gone down. The shootings of civilians by police has gone down, but lo and behold, this year, they're back up to record levels. So there was only a momentary decrease in the number of shootings of civilians, and it's hard to say whether that was taser use or awareness. I seem to think it's awareness, because the number of shootings in Harris County dropped when the awareness went up, and the drop was in place before the tasers were even deployed. So it isn't tasers, it's awareness, and we need to keep up that awareness. And another big problem is that officers who are accused of excessive force seem to be accused of it time and time again. So we need to get rid of the bad apples. It's a few officers that are causing the problem, but there's a problem in the system, and that is we keep those officers and we don't discipline them, and we got to have the policies in place to protect people's civil rights.
Yes, thank you. And are the tasers, are they substitute for guns, or are they unplus on top of the guns?
I wish they were a substitute for guns, but what has been seen right now, there's already two shooting deaths by HPD officers within Harris County in the last 2 months. So that's at a pace which is more than last year. So what we see is there doesn't seem to be a decrease in the shootings. There's already been 4 deaths in Harris County this year, when last year there were 10 deaths in Harris County for the whole year. In these 2 months, there's already been 4 confirmed deaths, maybe 5 confirmed deaths by law enforcement already. So the taser does not seem to be used as a substitute. It's just an addition.
Thank you so much, sir. Okay, this is Abby again with Indy Media. Can you tell us your name, sir?
Mark Waller.
And why are you out here today?
Well, I heard about this protest over the death by the just ridiculous use of the taser. And, you know, I'd be willing to consider the use of the tasers, but it's happening too frequently that they're used in non-lethal situations. And it really seems like either more research needs to go on or more training needs to go on before we can allow these things on the streets.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is Abby again with Indy Media. Can you tell us your name?
My name's Cheryl Wolf.
Okay, and what are you doing here today?
Protesting against police brutality and their taser use.
Okay, and why are you so passionate about this?
Well, I think it's very wrong what they're doing and killing an innocent person that doesn't deserve to be killed by this. And it's sick and disgusting, and it's wrong. We're out here to protest this disgusting thing that they're doing.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this is Abby again with KPFT Indy Media. What's your name?
Jolanda Jones.
And what are you doing here today at the protest?
I am protesting the use of tasers.
And what are your beliefs about taser usage these days?
Well, I don't think that tasers have been sufficiently tested to find out the pros and cons on them. And, I mean, again, fundamentally, my problem is that whenever they go and experiment on with people, they always experiment with black people, Hispanic people, or poor people. So I've got real issues with that. I don't think that there are any scientific studies, and there's got to be other means to subdue people. But for the most part, I believe law enforcement tends to use excessive force, I mean, in almost every instance. So whether it's excessive physical force or whether it's excessive verbal abuse. And so I just think the whole HPD system, Harris County Sheriff's Department system, just needs to be reformed. But, I mean, here you have someone dying with the use of a taser, and, of course, they try to say he has heart problems or something like that. So there's always an excuse when people die, and it's just really, really problematic to me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much.
Those were interviews gathered this evening at the protest against taser use that took place in front of the Harris County Criminal Justice Center. For updates on this issue, please visit our website, www.houston.indymedia.org.
This next clip is from 2012. It was recorded at the October 22nd Coalition Rally Against Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation.
There's a direct correlation to the fact that Harris County is also number one in the nation for prison incarceration, and also number one in the nation as far as death penalty. Am I right, Gloria?
Yes.
All right. There's a direct correlation between the police and injustice. There is a direct correlation between who the police target. They target black, brown, and poor white communities because they make financial benefit from it. They get money based on arrests. They target communities that they know can't fight them. And they use brutality many times when you try to exercise your so-called rights. Okay? The problem is there is profit motivation behind this whole police and court system. The 13th Amendment allegedly ended slavery, but it didn't. It says you cannot be made a slave unless you commit a crime. So once you commit a crime, you're bought back into slavery. okay? And they can discriminate on you worse than they did in 1865, because under the term criminal, you can't even get a job or somewhere to work or somewhere to stay. So instead of just discriminating you based on race, they based on you being a crime. But still, it is on race because they target black, brown, and poor white communities. We need to call it what it is. It is a continuation of slavery. We must abolish slavery. The death penalty is lynching. It's legalized lynching. It's nothing more, nothing less. If you get charged with a crime, a misdemeanor, you need at least a couple of $1,000s to get out of jail. A couple of $1,000s for a so-called attorney. If you get charged with a felony, you need close to $5,000 to $10,000. Who out here has got an extra $5,000 to $10,000? Exactly. It's all based on race and class. And if you go down to that courtroom, we're out there, we've been picketing against police brutality for 91 weeks now, every Tuesday. We were at City Hall, and then we moved to the court. But now we're back at City Hall because now this mayor, Anise Parker, is trying to put a proposition on the ballot. Well, it's on the ballot for November the 6th that would help the so-called power structures kill our civilian review board campaign that we've been working on for 2 years by initiative, and also the food sharing ordinance. Why is it that they want to stop us from feeding hungry and people who need help? There's a direct coalition. They want us in the jails. There's profit in the jails. For every month you're in jail, they make a profit of $5,000.
That's right.
$5,000 a month. If they give you a year, they're going to make what? $60,000. If the judge give you 10 years, that's $1,000,000. It's only about slavery. That's all it is. We say police, they are the slave catchers. They not only capture you just because you are of your race like they did in the 1800s, now they target you because of your status, our class, caste system. It's racist. They want us to be a permanent underclass. So there's a reason why the Black Panthers stand side by side with Occupy, with the Revolutionary Party, and all freedom fighters. Because if you stand for justice, then you're standing for all humanity. All power to the people. Abolish this criminal justice system. Abolish these crooked cops. Abolish the death penalty. And the war on the people. We've been rallying, we've been picketing. But guess what? We're going to continue to move forward. Today, we just locked in with the Thurgood Marshall Law School on February the 23rd. They have agreed to take up our Civilian Review Board campaign so that we can so-called get a legitimate, quote-unquote, institution to validate what we've been saying in the streets forever. So we want to invite everybody to come out on February the 23rd, but also every Tuesday at 12 noon, we're in front of the City Hall. We're in front of City Hall until November. After the election, we're going back to the auction block. The auction block is the Harris County Jail. It's a direct reason why there's a mass incarceration so high. The police snatch you up. They beat you up. But then when you get in that court, it costs thousands of dollars to get you free. So we got to unite. No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
What do we want?
Freedom.
Justice. What do we want?
Justice.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
When do we want it?
Now.
Are we going to get it?
By any means necessary.
All power to the people. United we stand.
Occupying army.
That's right.
I thought I was just kind of being provocative, but no. That's what, that among the slang for cops now, we see the occupation. And they're called the occupation because that's how they behave. Like an occupying army. And the jails that they send you into, whether or not you ever thought that there was anything decent about the idea of jails, there's nothing decent about this idea of jails.
This next clip is an interview from 2012 with local Houston artist Rad Rich.
Why do people call you Rad Rich, and when did that all come about?
I came about that myself. BMX Plus magazine had a guy named Radical Rick. Rick, R-I-C-K. And I thought that was really cool, so I changed the Radical to Radical Rich. I thought it would be kind
of cool. How old were you?
I was probably 15 years old, I think, yeah.
Are you a native Houstonian?
Unfortunately, yes, but most people don't know that. I'm actually from here.
The punk scene in the country was starting, so what was going on here in Houston?
I think what was going on here in Houston was the same that was going on in a lot of major cities around the country. You know, you had young kids that decided to do stuff themselves. They didn't like the fact that, you know, there was no all-ages clubs, there was no all-ages venues at all. And the punk scene catered to kids that were outcast and kids that were looking for something different than that was given to them by the mainstream. And there was also a political element of that, because what was going on with the Reagan era just popping into power and that stuff. So a lot of the older people that were into politics kind of latched onto it also. So it was a pretty good scene as far as politically and musically. A lot of great bands came out in the 80s and 90s.
There's a concept that I talk about and I am affected by constantly, and that concept is the black box. And the way I describe it is there is this little teeny tiny box, and that's all you can do or be if you're black. So punk is not in that box. What was it like being an African American on the punk scene?
It's funny because you get more stuff from your own people than you than from the outside, because it's different than what is given to you as far as being black, being African American. You know, you're black, you're supposed to do this and this, you're not supposed to listen to this and this, you're supposed to dress according to whatever is popular, you know, and do whatever silly trend is out now, and you're supposed to drive whatever is whatever the media tells you is cool. I was like, man, the hell with that, because I didn't want to be a part of that.
What were some of those things that you remember hearing from, I don't know, your friends in high school or family members? Because I know that that's often where, like, the heartfelt critique comes in, because, you know, some people you can blow off, but what were some of those things that just early on kind of stuck with you that just were like, man, no?
I remember I remember July, they had Free Mohawk Month at this place called Strands.
Free Mohawk Month?
Right.
What
right.
was that about?
Like, well, it was a hair place in the village, Rice and Raisin Village, and they did free mohawks. And it was funny because right across from there was a Caribana Reggae Club,
right,
which was that was something that was, you know, also void for black people then, you know, is reggae music, you know, not like now when it's, you know, dance hall and all that made it chic, you know, to be cool to listen to reggae. But back then it wasn't. So, but they had Free Mohawk Month at this place Strands, and so I would get a mohawk. And it was cool. Once all the time I'm in the Montrose area, it's great. As soon as I cross that bridge over 288 to the Third Ward, then I gotta wear a hat. You know, I can't be seen with a, you know, mohawk. You know, black kid with a mohawk. What the hell's wrong with this guy? You know, it just wasn't cool. And people would laugh, and people were like, "Yeah, what's wrong with you, man?" You know, people didn't understand, you know. And it's not like it is now, where it's like, yeah, it's cool now. It's, you know, it's nothing dangerous about it, you know, which as then it was dangerous. People didn't look at it to say, as being anything but weird, you know, anti-establishment, you know, we need to lock this guy up. And people in the black community especially looked at it bad. You know? And I think that was when the Jerry curls were big here.
So you didn't have a mohawk Jerry curl?
No, I did not. As a matter of fact, my dad tried to put a southern curl on my hair, and it just spiked out like...
A what curl?
It's still called Southern Curl, and it was like it's a Southern deal. It made your hair curly and greasy, and you had to keep all this stuff on it. But me, it did. He put it on there, and it just kind of just blew out. And so I just brushed it back and made it into like his rockabilly deal.
Okay.
It's kind of weird.
For the record, can you like distinguish for folks what the difference is between a skinhead and a punk and a sharp?
They listen to it's not really that much difference, really. Like skinheads kind of like a wilder kind of vibe. Some of them are into like working class, and some are into like kind of the fascist aspect of you know, and some are not, just, you know, working class and English, you know. Actually skinhead is actually black. You know, the whole like look of skinheads is based on Jamaican culture, which has the suspenders and the black boots is what they wore in the sugar canes in Jamaica. And they took that look, primacy and all that stuff came about later.
Because I'm going to Afropunk, so like, what do I need?
You're going to Afropunk?
If I'm going to pass myself off as a good punk, what do I need?
No, I think just show up and be yourself. That's it. Being black is being punk enough.
This next clip is also from 2011.
And welcome back, folks. That was just the first of a few clips that we'll have for you tonight, brought to you from Marco Cervantes, also known as Mexican Step Grandfather, who is on the line. Welcome, Marco.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor.
Thank you. Well, we hear the prodigal son returns because you are originally from Houston.
Yes. Yeah.
And you shared this is actually your first Houston interview.
First radio interview in Houston. So it's
well, thank you very much for the honor. Thank you for gracing Houston Indie Media with that first. So tell us, Marco, tell us a little bit about how you started with your music.
Oh, I've started a while back, as a teenager, you know, in my teenage years, in various groups, doing little shows, doing little battles and stuff like that, and actually in two major groups. Wasted Youth was a Houston group, and we had some radio play like in the 90s, and after that I was in a group called Revolt to the Sun, where I DJ'd and I rapped at the same time, and did a lot of music around the Houston area. Then I moved to San Antonio for grad school, and I started DJing more there, and started DJing under the name Mexican Step Grandfather. I was using my real name, Marco C, as my name then, so it's started using Mexican Step Grandfather because I was playing hip hop, but I was also using a lot of records from my Mexican Step Grandfather because we were all Tejanos, so my grandfather was actually from Mexico, so that was like a connection for me to Mexico. I got all this great music from him, so I would like sneak it in the hip hop mixes. I did that as a DJ, started gaining a lot of popularity in San Antonio as a DJ, so I started using that as also my rap name as well, because I did like the ideas that I could come up with the name in terms of playing with the sort of ambiguity of living on both sides of the border, being Mexican-American, Chicano identity, and things like that. I felt Mexican Step Grandfather is a good way to come across with all those different sorts of identity problems and things like that.
What were some of those early records? I know that that there must have been some interesting things in those boxes.
Well, was it? Oh, yeah. Just the stuff like Jose, Agustin Ramirez, some crazy groups too, Los Astros de China. I gained a lot of samples from those types of records, just older, gritty, a lot of 70s Mexican records. One thing also that I do is make beats. Like, I make my own beats for the albums that I've done. So what I've done is taken a lot of those records that I used to slip into the mixes and just created altogether new mixes, new beats out of them. So they're just the grittiest samples. Just feel really lucky to have fallen, you know, on them. And so I'm not sampling the sort of typical,
the same old things,
blue stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also in the studio with us is John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marco, this is John Herrera. One quick question. You teach at the University of Texas, San Antonio, I believe, right?
Yes, sir.
How have you worked your music into your academic life? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the, I guess, the details of your academics, and not to get too much into that, but just kind of curious as to how you address your music in your academic career.
I see. Yeah, a lot of the things that I talk about in my songs, in my music, I talk about those same things in the classroom, because at UTSA, the University of Texas at San Antonio, I'm in the Mexican-American Studies program. So what we do is really focus on teaching not just Chicano youth and Mexican-American youth, but youth across San Antonio about the history of colonization in the Texas area, and really like grasping or really getting into the Mexican-American identity, the Mexican-American culture. So with the music, I keep that in mind, that I'm teaching these classes, that I'm, you know, actually focused on that, you know, that type of material. So that plays along. As far as content, this particular semester or this summer, I taught a class on hip-hop as well. So hip-hop in a global context, looking at hip-hop from all over the world, really, and looking at the various spaces that this hip-hop music comes from. And the class itself really focuses on colonized peoples who are oppressed, different areas, and the hip-hop being created out of those areas. So I'm able to slip my music in there, you know, here and there, and plug my own music, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's really how I'm incorporating the music side of what I do into the classroom, is just really trying to keep the content parallel, consistent, and really just being me. I think that both of them really speak to each other as far as both
right.
of those positions.
Well, it sounds really interesting. It makes me want to sign up for your class.
Oh, please do.
Well,
please sign up.
So, Marco, you were talking about hip-hop in the global context. Now, I know that you are now international, so you went to Europe, you did a few shows in Mexico. Tell us a little bit about, you know, especially the reaction in Europe, where, you know, everyone here sees that as, you know, the land of the colonizers. So talk a little bit about the hip-hop scene and how the youth there is reacting to this type of music.
Yeah, I they're really into it. They really get into it. I mean, one of the things that might be going on there, you know, I think, you know, I felt very exoticized out there. You know, it's not the typical Spanish-looking person out there, you know, among all these other Spanish hip-hop artists. So that was, I think, you know, the first reaction that I got, as far as, like, you know, why are these Spanish kids, you know, really getting into it? And that's one of the things I saw going on there. But I also saw a real appreciation of hip hop culture there. I saw that as a way for the youth there to claim an identity in a world of confusion that they're going through, as far as economic hardships, the switching of governments. You know, not so long ago they were under the Franco regime. So there's sorts mm-hmm. of, there's this weird identity politics going on over there, and it really seems like hip-hop, anyway, the kids that are into hip-hop, it seems like a way for them to claim an identity of one that's sort of matched with the experiences that they're going through. So yeah,
that's it for tonight's show. Thanks for listening. This is V signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.